Okay, Boker Tov. Shalom Lechem. Very good. So we're at chapter 8, lesson 8, section 7. So working our way through some syntax and what happens when we combine different forms of the verb in sequence. And section 7, we come to the negative, how you negate a verb. It's headed velo ya'asu. So in a passage that refers to future actions, if the flow of the passage is in any way broken so that the next clause or sentence does not begin with a verb joined directly to vav, so we've seen that when you have a sequence of verbs connected with vav, the time idea of the first verb, the aspect of the first verb, carries on down the chain. Then the future time typically is indicated afresh by using an imperfect form of the verb. So what we've seen in section 6, we have yishlach v'lachach, so we start with an imperfective form of the verb, then vav connecting to a perfective form of the verb, and that imperfective sense carries on down the sequence. If for any reason that sequence gets interrupted by a verb without a vav, and you want to start the sequence again, you restart with another imperfective. So for example, when a negative statement occurs, beginning v'lo, the vav is joined to lo and not to the verb, so the verb will be in its imperfective form. So effectively, the v'lo interrupts the sequence. So lo is the usual way that we negate verbs. We'll find that there's another form of the negative, which is al, but we'll encounter that later. So in this passage, after velo, the verb is ya'asu, they will do, so we restart that sort of imperfective chain. So we read, Yivarek Adonai et Amo Yisrael, v'natan lahem et Eretz Kanaan, v'shamaru et mitzotayv, velo ya'asu ra, v'asu et asher tov. Let's read that together. Yivarek Adonai et Amo Yisrael v'natan lahem et Eretz Kanaan v'shamaru et mitzotayv v'lo ya'asu ra v'asu et asher tov. Yivarek, we start with an imperfective. The Lord will bless, or the Lord blesses. So here we're going to assume it's talking about what he's going to do in the future. But there is no time marker on that, just an imperfective. He blesses or will bless his people, that's Amo, Israel, and give. So v'natan, we have an imperfective with a vav prefix on it. So it carries on the aspect, the imperfective aspect of the first verb, and give to them the land of Canaan, of Canaan. Vashamaru, so another perfective with a vav prefix, still continuing this chain of with a non-perfective sense, and they will keep et mitzotayv, his commandments. Velo ya'asu. So now we've interrupted the sequence with a velo. So to maintain the non-perfective aspect, we have to really have a non-perfective form of the verb. So ya'asu, prefix form, and they will not do ra, evil. V'asu, so a perfective form but prefixed with a vav, so it carries on that non-perfective sense from the ya'asu. They will do et asher, that which tov, is good. Okay. Now in Numbers 6, 24 through 27, this is the Aaronic blessing that the priest pronounces over Israel. Notice that most of the verbs express a wish for present and future blessing. So we read, Yivarechecha Adonai v'yishmerecha Ya'er Adonai Panaiv, Elecha Vihunecha Yisa Adonai Panaiv Elecha Vyasem Lecha Shalom Vasamu et Shmo Al Bnei Yisrael Vani Avarachem. Together. Vayivarechecha Adonai Vyishmerecha Ya'er Adonai Panaiv Elecha Vihunecha Yisa Adonai Panaiv Elecha Vyasem Lecha Shalom Vsamu et Shmi Al Bnei Yisrael Vani Avarachem. So we begin with an imperfective, Yivarechecha, with Adonai as the subject, may the Lord, and here really we're taking it as expressed as a wish, may the Lord bless. So looking for this to carry on in the future, may the Lord bless you, singular suffix, may the Lord bless you, the Yishmerecha, and may he keep you. Then Ya'er is from, may be familiar with the word or, which means light. And this is the verb form of that, to cause light, to cause something to have light, or for something to shine with light. May the Lord shine panaiv, his face, elecha, to you or upon you, vihunecha, and be gracious to you. The chen is gracious. Chanan is the verb, to be gracious to somebody. Yisa, may the Lord, and yisa is from nasa, to lift up. The nun has disappeared and left a dagesh there in the scene. It's the remnant of the nun. May the Lord lift up panav, his face, elecha, to you. Vayasem, and may he put, so seem is to put, lecha, to you, shalom, peace. I may put upon you peace. Vsamu, and they will, and then here we switch to a perfective form with a vav, and we can sort of take that, this as being expressing a result, really, so that they will put et shemi, my name, Al Bnei Yisrael, upon the sons of Israel, or upon the Israelites, va'ani, and I, emphatic pronoun, will bless them. So there we have a mixture of forms of the verb. So most of those are the imperfective forms, and we're going to learn later on that there's a particular form of that that is we call a jussive, which expresses a wish. And that's really what many of these are doing. And then down there towards the end, we switch to a perfective form of the verb with a vav that carries on the sense. So we go from v'yasem to v'samu, carries on the sense of the v'yasem. And we read, note that sam, he put, and samu, they put, are perfective forms there towards the end. Because the blessing is seen as a future action, the samu has the sense, and they will put. Even though it's a perfective, the vav carries on the sense from earlier on in the sentence and carries on that aspect of here referring to future action. And then avarachem, I will bless them, is imperfective as it follows the word ani and not v. So the v ani there has served to interrupt that chain. So we... if the ani was not there and we just simply had the with the verb at the end, then the avarachem would be in a perfective form with a vav prefix carrying on that sequence of the aspect. Okay. So some of what we've covered in this lesson is then summarized for us in section 8. Several different forms of the verb, the syntax of sentences. So we've seen we can have Shalach, he sent. Vayishlach, which, so Shalach, the perfective, over on the right-hand column. Vayishlach, the continuing narrative form. Vashalach, the perfective with a vav prefix. And he will send, which there works as to carry on the sequence from a previous verb. Yishlak, which is the imperfective. He was sending, he will send, and you have to take the time from the context. Vahu shalak, where we have vav and a noun, or in this case a pronoun, and a perfective. And that is giving us, we would often translate that as a pluperfect. It's giving us often background information that has occurred before the narrative. And then finally, vahu sholeach, vav noun, or pronoun in this case, and a participle. Translated something, for he was sending while he is sending, which is giving us an ongoing activity. So those are the six different forms we might encounter, and they're spelled out for us now in this little table here. So section one of the table, we have shalach, shalach, and lakach, lakach, and yashav, yashav. So these are all perfective forms of the verb, and the standard vowel pattern for these is kametz, patach, and perfective forms, forms which usually indicate definite or complete action in past, present, or future time. And you take the time marker from the surrounding context, but action viewed as complete in itself. Then section two, we have the continuing narrative forms, so with a va prefix, and usually a dagesh in the next consonant. So vayishlach, vayishlach, vayikach, vayikach, and vayeshev, vayeshev. So then he sent, then he took, and then he dwelt. And vayikach, the lamed has disappeared and gotten assimilated into the kof, and left the dagesh there. So forms which usually indicate the next step in a continuing narrative. So as you read an Old Testament Hebrew narrative along, you get just a whole sequence of the verbs in this form. Section three, we have the imperfective form. Yishlach, yishlach, yikach, yikach, and yeshev, yeshev. And those look pretty similar to the forms of two, the continuing narrative forms without the va prefix. And for some verbs, some patterns of verbs, there is a difference, but for many of them, it has similar form, just without the va prefix. So these imperfectives usually indicate continuing, uncompleted, or indefinite action in past, present, or future time. So it's distinguished from the perfective in that the action is viewed as incomplete. But for both of them, there's no time marker on it. You have to get the time from the surrounding sense. Whereas for the continuing narrative form, that is all referring to past action. Then he did this, then she did that, then they did this, then he said, then you said, and so on. Okay, so those are the three basic forms of the verb as they stand on their own. Perfective, continuing narrative, and imperfective. Then in sections 4 and 5, we now have what happens when we get a form of the verb prefixed by a vav and a noun, or in this case, a pronoun, where that noun or pronoun is the subject then of the verb. So section 4, we have vahu shalach, vahu shalach, vahu lachach, vahu lakach, and vahu yashav. Vahu yashav. So vav, pronoun, and then a perfective form of the verb. And this you often find at the beginning of a narrative, and these phrases indicate a previous action, state, or situation, and give us some background information that we need to then help understand the subsequent narrative. And usually we would translate these as a pluperfect, because they're describing action that has already taken place before our opening continuing narrative form of the verb. And that's how we indicate that in English, is with a pluperfect, is action that is completed in the past and has been completed already by the time we get to another past tense of the verb. And often we might translate these with a now, so here, and he had sent, or we might translate it, now he had sent, now he had taken, now he had stayed, and then we'll launch into a sequence of continuing narrative forms of the verb. So this happens quite often at near the opening of narratives. Number five is a little less common, but certainly happens enough. Vehu sholeach, vehu sholeach, so furtive patak there. Vehu lokeach, vehu lokeach, and vehu yoshev, vehu yoshev. Now the sholeach, the lokeach, and yoshev are all participles. So that's the standard pattern for participle. The most common, the plain vanilla form of the participle is a holum and a tsere. So o-e. And then where you have a final patach, then it adds in a furtive patach. So yoshev, that standard pattern for a participle. So in this case, we have a vav, a noun, and a participle. And this, whereas the vav noun perfective describes action that is past already, this one, it describes action that is viewed as being ongoing. So a phrase is indicating an action state or situation during which something else takes place in past or present time. So we would get this, and then we'd get a continuing narrative form of the verb. And this action, described by the participle, is carrying on as that continuing narrative form of the verb happens. So we would often, in English, translate this with really an imperfective, an imperfect. He was doing something, he was sending, she was taking, he was staying. That action of staying or of sending is ongoing as then the subsequent, the next verb unfolds. And often with this, there will then be a hine in there as well. So it might be v'hine hu sholeach. And look, he was sending. Okay? Now, that might all seem a little theoretical, and the best way to get to grips with this is to read and see this in action in the biblical narrative. Okay, section 9. Read Genesis 24, 1 through 10. So we are ready to launch in and read a piece of Hebrew straight out of the Hebrew Bible. Now, you have four sheets I've handed you. So the first one is this one that looks really overwhelming. And this is just copied out of the standard edition of the Hebrew Bible that's used, not the one that's used in synagogues, but it's the one that's used in sort of all academic circles, and it is the standard form. And this is actually, it's based on a manuscript. It's more or less a replica of a manuscript from the year 10,008. So a manuscript that is 1,000 years old this year. And it's called Leningradensis. It used to be in the public library in Leningrad or St. Petersburg, and then got sold to the British Museum for a bunch of money. What we have on this page, so you have to learn which way up to hold it and which way. So I'm beginning on page 33. So chapter 24 begins down at the bottom. Okay, so we have 24:1. And there's a number of things going on this page. So there's marginal notes down the outside column, the left-hand column there. This would be the outside. And these are annotations that were added in by the Masoretic scribes, where they are just commenting on various forms of words that occur in the passage. A few of those things we pay attention to. Most of them are quite technical. But they'd include things like rare forms of a word. And this was some of the things that they used to help ensure that they were writing an accurate manuscript. And they paid a tremendous amount of attention to getting it right. Then down at the bottom, we have two lines of small typeface there, prefixed MP and MM and so on. And these refer, also were added in by the scribes, and these refer to a whole set of other notes that they kept that they would put at the end of a book. In this case, they're put in a completely separate volume, and they'd note various other things. And so those are index references to these other notes that the scribes kept. And this was an amazing thing that they did, an amazing amount of care that they took over trying to get these manuscripts right. Oh, and it was all done manually, yep. And then right at the bottom, we have three lines with all sorts of different fonts in it. And these are notes added in by the 20th century editor and tells us something about different, if there's a variation in some different manuscripts and so on. And we can, much later on, begin to pay attention to what all that stuff is about. And then to the right-hand side of the beginning of chapter 24, you'll see that there's a big samach, and that is one of the divisions, not a chapter division, it is a division of the readings for the synagogue. So this would be the beginning of reading number kaf. So you see in the square brackets there's a little kaf with a dot above it. The dot indicates that the kaf there is functioning as a number. So Hebrew, right? I mean, Hebrew uses letters as numbers. So in English, we use our numbers, our Roman, our letters are Roman, come from the Latin alphabet and the Roman characters, but our numbers come from Arabic, and the Arabs got them from Sanskrit. And that's a more recent development, and you all know how to read Roman numerals, although that's a dying art, where they primarily used letters to indicate numbers. And then Hebrew and Greek both used characters to indicate numbers. But they did a little differently than the Romans did. So the numbers 1 through 10 are the first 10 letters of the alphabet. Then the 11th letter of the alphabet is 20. The 12th letter is 30, and so on. And they number up through the tens and get to 100. And then they number by hundreds up through the end of the alphabet. And so if you wanted to spell out 15, or say 18, you would put down the letter for 10 and then the letter for 8. So here, kaf, this is actually the 11th letter of the alphabet, so this indicates 20. So this is the beginning of the 20th reading. So kaf is the 11th letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So 1 through 10 are the numbers aleph through yod. So yod is 10, and then kaf is 20, lamed is 30, mem is 40, nun is 50. And the typical synagogue Bible, Hebrew Bible, the number, and at least the synagogue one that I have, the numbering is all done using letters. And so it's difficult to find your way. Well, it's difficult for me still to find my way around in it. I just don't read the numbers that way very well. So, for example, right up at the very top on the outside margin, first line, there's a dalet with a dot above it. So there, that dalet is being used as 4. So the whole Bible is split up according to this pattern with Hebrew, with synagogue readings split up into sections. And these are much older than our current chapter divisions. And they actually do usually fall in sensible places. Okay, that refers to the fact that there will be a marginal note about it. So, for example, the very top line, there are two words there that have open circles above them. The first one, metecha, and that refers, you look over to the column, you see there's a little entry there, dalet with a dot above it, which essentially says that that form, metecha, that particular form occurs 4 times in the Hebrew Bible. And the scribes know that. It's rare enough for them to comment on it. And then there's a a big period on the marginal columns, and that means that's the end of that entry. And then along to the end, we get Livne Het at the end of the line, and a circle above, midway above the word, in this case above the meteg, above the hyphen. And so that too indicates that there's a marginal entry. And in that case, it's Yod with a dot above it, so that indicates 10. And then a word Bator. And in that case, the dot above the resh actually doesn't indicate a number. It indicates that that is then an abbreviation. And then you can go and look up another book and find out what that abbreviation is actually short for. So these scribes, accurately preserving and copying the text was a huge deal for them. They were very aware they were dealing with sacred scripture, and it was extremely important for them to copy it. We've had this manuscript, this 1,000-year-old manuscript now for quite a while, and then we've discovered that the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, and what archaeologists found was that in the 1,000 intervening years, the text was preserved remarkably well. And a good measure of that was we have these Masoretic scribes to thank who took such meticulous care over copying and handing this down. Well, typically it was a family. You grew up in a family of scribes, and then you would go into that, basically into that business, and would just grow and develop in your ability and your reputation. And so even today, synagogues will try and get together the money and pay for a handwritten scroll, at least of the Torah. And they'll pay a lot of money for this, and it'll be a prized possession. It will be handwritten by trained scribes who take tremendous care over doing it. Okay, so that will overwhelm you a bit to begin with, but ultimately we'll get into the point where you actually then can look at a page of this and understand. The next one I gave you is just a black and white single sheet. So this has the text of 24:1 through 10 laid out with. Now, as you look at that, you'll see a number of marks that you haven't encountered before. So hopefully you'll recognize a lot of what's on the page, but there'll be a number of marks, and these are the accent marks. So I've also given you a color-coded page, which primarily black text with, not this multicolored page. Yeah, I'll deal with that later. And this shows what all these different points are. So in black, we have the consonantal text. So the consonantal text, that is the sacred text, at least from the point of view of the Masoretic scribes, and that got fixed early on. The scribes would not meddle with that at all. What they did do is then they added in these other features to help read the text. In red, we have the vowel points, and these now would be called the nekud. And the process of adding in these additional marks is called, would be added in by a neked, a person who points the text. And pointing it means adding in these dots and dashes and little marks. So the vowels you are familiar with, they go above, mostly below the letters, below the consonants, in some cases above, and so on. Okay. Then there are in green the accent marks. And these are called, we call these the ta'amim. And these, every single word has an accent on it. In the case of a word, two words that are joined by a meteg, by this hyphen, this raised hyphen, there will be one accent mark for the whole, for the pair, or in the second line, towards the end of the second line there, we've got three words joined together by a meteg, and there's one accent for the whole lot. So the accents there in green. And these indicate a couple of things. One, they are marks for how this should be chanted. So they actually have a musical purpose in cantillation. And then they have a syntactic purpose. They show whether the word is, the accents can be conjunctive or disjunctive, and they show whether the word is syntactically flows into the next word or whether it's disjunctive. So they function that way a little bit like punctuation, like semicolons and commas. and it'll be worth over the course of the year. We'll try and learn the three or four most important of these disjunctive accents, because they do help break the text down into shorter units, and they show you basically how to break it down into clauses, and then you translate that a clause, and then you move on to the next one. Okay. That's the green. The green are the cantillation marks, or the accents. And then the blue, there are a few other points. So that would include the hyphen, so the meteg that joins two words together. And then the sof pasuk, which is the end of verse marker, the two diamonds arranged like a colon. This was typeset by hand. This is this would have been pre-computer, I'd imagine. The new version that is coming out is all computer typeset. This company that does the font for that is up, Lingua Software is up in Seattle. And it's a lot of work developing a font that can handle this degree of typographical exactness. Okay, so we're going to read off of the black and white one. And then as we go through, I will explain then this color-coded one here, where I've color-coded the what we call a discourse analysis of how the text is unfolding. But I'll refer to that as we go along. Okay, so we're going to read with the black and white version, also paying attention to section 10 in the book, there halfway down page 97, and looking over at this color-coded one, and try and make our way through our first reading straight from the Hebrew Bible. Melody, would you like to read verse 1? Good. The Avraham Zaken ba bayamim va'adonai berach et Avraham bakol. So the notes tell us Zaken means he was old, and ba bayamim, he was advanced in years. So ba is the perfective form of bo, to go, to come. So it means he had gone by yamim in days. Yamim, days. So he had gone on in days. So an idiom for meaning he was old, he had advanced in years. Then let me just point out what a couple of these accents. So there's an accent that marks the halfway point in the verse. It doesn't mean the halfway point in terms of the number of words, but it means it's, if you imagine every verse has a semicolon in it, this would be the semicolon. And sometimes it might occur before the last word in the verse, and you might get 30 words, and then you get the semicolon. But it's where, syntactically, from the point of view of the meaning, the break will be. And that's the under the bayamim. It's the caret, the upward pointing arrow. So that's the first of these accents that is worth being able to recognize. And it's called an achnak. You don't particularly need to remember it. It means that you've reached a major break. It's the major punctuation mark in the sentence. So if you notice where that is, then you can say, okay, I can translate it up to that point, take a pause, and then we're going to start in on a major new clause there.
So even though it's in the center of the world, it's the end of this word.
Right. Well, it's under a particular syllable of the word.
Oh.
And that syllable is the syllable that gets accented. So it's under the im, mm-hmm. So it means that that's the syllable that we accent, bayamim.
How do you translate the first four words? So Abraham...
Well, we're waiting for Melody to tell us how to translate the first four words.
Abraham was an old man.
Okay, how do we... So we're going to take just the first four words up to that accent mark.
Okay.
And three out of the four words are told us.
Yeah. And, Abraham was old.
Mm-hmm.
What is God?
So Abba Ba Yamim. Yeah, he had gone in years, so he was advanced in years.
Okay.
So Dobson gives that us as a note there.
There's no and connected. So he was old.
Mm-hmm. Right. So there's actually over Zakain, you see the two dots over the kof of Zakain. That's actually another fairly major break. So that would sort of have the equivalent you might think of as a comma. So. Yeah, so that's an accent.
Another
accent that's worth being able to recognize because it also represents a reasonably major break. And so you can think of that one as being at the level of a comma. So now this is giving you a lot of things to pay attention to. So I'll sort of remind you of this. So what I would do looking at this, I go, Avraham Zakein. Okay, I get that accent there that indicates a break. I'd translate that as a little unit. Now, Abraham was old, comma, ba ba yamim, he was advanced in years. So actually, we have a little bit of parallelism. So it tells us the same thing again in a different way, sort of like how Hebrew poetry works.
Do you do anything with the vav? The vav and stuff?
Well, now the vav in front, so here we have the pattern of number 4 on the previous page, 96. So vav, noun, and then a perfective form of the verb. So we might even translate this as a pluperfect. Now, Abraham had grown old, something like that. But it's the vav shows we're carrying on from some previous narrative, but then whole books of the Bible begin with vav. So it breaks the rule of what you're taught in high school English, not to begin sentences with and. Whole books begin with and, just to show that they're carrying on a continuing story. But we wouldn't necessarily have to translate that vav as and. I would just translate it, now Abram had grown old. So it's giving us background information, and then he was advanced in years. Pause, semicolon, we get that caret upward pointing arrow marks a break. And then we carry on with the rest of the sentence.
Okay. And God, Abraham, in everything.
Yep. And the Lord. Now, look, we have the same pattern here. So we have vav, noun, and then perfective form of the verb, berach, from barach, to bless. Now, the Lord had blessed. So again, we could translate it as a pluperfect. The Lord had blessed Abraham in everything. So what I have done on this color-coded sheet, and this is how I now layout narratives that I work on. This is giving us background information, so I indent it one level, and I've colored the verbs in green. Down at the bottom, I indicate that green there indicates a perfective form of the verb. So they're indented one level. So now Abram had grown old. He was advanced in years. Now the Lord had blessed Abram in everything. They're not part of the main storyline. The storyline is carried on by a sequence of these continued narrative forms of the verb. But they're giving us, here at the beginning of this episode of the story, they're giving us background information that will help us understand the story as it proceeds. Okay. Good. Okay, verse 2, Judy. Good. Vayomer Avraham El Avdo Zakan Beto Hamoshel Bekol Asher Lo Simna Yadaka Tachat Yereki.
Okay. That's what I said. Well,
you read very well. So, so notice there I read El Avdo. Essentially all is one word. So it's joined by that hyphen, that meteg. And there's just a single accent mark on it there on the last syllable. And then the simna. Simna also read as one word. And there's a single but eventually you'll get to the point where you do that. You're still sounding out the syllables for it. Okay? And now here, Dobson has to give us quite a bit of vocabulary to help us with this verse.
That Bekhor,
Shur,
low, or whatever, that's the center point?
Uh-huh, right. So there's the accent under low, okay. That upward pointing arrow that indicates that's the halfway point.
So in translation, that's where I'd go to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Now I got to tell you what it said?
Mm-hmm. The first two words are easy.
Something about Abraham.
Vayomer. Vayomer is probably the most common word in the Bible.
And he said.
Uh-huh. And he said. Then he said.
Then he
yep.
Said.
So then Abraham said.
Okay. Abraham said.
El Avdo. Remember Avdo? We've had this in some of our readings. His servant. So Eved is servant here with suffix to his servant. And then we're told Zakan Beto, and Dobson tells us Zakan means the old one. So a zakein is an old man, an old, zakein is a adjective, but here just standing on its own meaning an old, in this case.
An old man then? Mm-hmm. Would it be a senior person in rank?
It would, well, in ancient Near Eastern society, those were synonymous.
Oh, they were?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Even in China.
Yeah.
In Chinese right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It causes problems nowadays if you want to put young people in charge in a society where they still elders really are elders. So and here it's a construct form going with Beto, so he's the Zakan Beto, the old man of Beto. Beit? Remember Beit? Is family or house. So house, either physically house or household, or then the household in terms of the family line. So he's the old man of the house, i.e. he's the one who's in charge of the house, has responsibility over the house.
Why is it Beit
Toh? So the O is his. So Beit is house, and then the O is the pronominal suffix. To Abraham, yeah. Mm-hmm. So then Abraham said to his servant, the old man of his house, the one in charge of the elder over his house, we might say the old man over his house, Ha Moshel B'Kol Asher Lo.
Is that where you put the quote marks then?
Not yet, no. So Ha Moshel, Dobson tells us, is the one in charge of. So the verb is Mashal. To rule, he ruled, he governed. Moshel, notice that vowel pattern, O-E, is participle, right? So Moshel is ruling, and then Ha-Moshel, where we now have an article on it, so it's turned it into a noun, it's the one who is doing the action of ruling. And he is ruling Moshel B, so the realm over which you rule is indicated with a ba, a bait prefix, kol asher lo. So kol asher lo, can you work out what that is? So kol? All or every, so, and then asher?
Asher. everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So asher is the relative pronoun. And then, so everything which, and then lo. Lamed with a O on it. Is to him. Yeah. So L means basically meaning of to as a prefix. So it's one of these inseparable prepositions gets joined to the beginning of a word. And it means to. And that can mean it's to in the sense of you're going to somewhere, or to in the sense of it belongs to. So in this case, it belongs to him. So this would be everything which is to him, i.e. everything which belongs to him, i.e. everything which was his. So Hamoshel Bekol Asher Lo is he ruled over everything which was his, i.e. he was in charge of all of his. He's in charge of everything he has. So his house, the running of his house, his cattle, his foxes, or he's his chief guy. And then we get our midway break. Although we're more than halfway through the sentence, but in terms from point of view of the syntax, we're. So Abram said to his servant, the old man over his house, the one who had charge over everything that was his. So we're told a fair bit about this guy in several different ways. And now, second half of the verse, Simna Yadaka Tachat Yereki. And now we have to be told several words here. Simna, so sim, the verb sim or sum means to put. He placed. And here sim is in the form of a imperative, a command. Now notice it can be, Dobson says, the form sim or sum. The middle letter there is a yod or a vav. And we have a set of verbs that have that as a middle letter. And the yod and the vav sort of are interchangeable. Sometimes you'll find it with the yod, sometimes with a vav. Seems soon. And then na, the na that gets joined on the end is just a little sort of nicety. It means, you can translate it as please or now, or it's a little flourish that helps make this seem a little less abrupt. Please put, or now put, or something put. Yadaka. Yad. Hand. Yad is hand. So yadaka is your hand. Tachat. So we had that just last week, I think. Tachat, where we had that diagram of under. Yep, so 89, the beginning of lesson 8, bottom of page 89, we have that diagram of some of these prepositions. So the table, the physical table over on the right-hand side, tachat is underneath, and the al is on top of or upon. So tachat, under, and yirechi, yarech is thigh, so yirechi, my thigh. The e ending there is a pronominal suffix, under my thigh. Okay, so there we finally have the dialogue. We finally have what he actually says.
So it comes after that little character.
In this case, it comes after that, yes.
But they don't put anything in quotes, or they don't have any way of, so you know it's dialogue.
You have to use
context
to tell where the dialogue is beginning. Yeah. Sometimes you'll get a lemor, which will essentially, you can just translate it as open quotation marks, and that would be like what we're saying when we would use quote, and would indicate, but sometimes you don't get an indication like that. And so on this, what I then have clarified that, so I've broken up line 10, verse 2, two lines here. Mm-hmm. So on the first line, I begin that over at the right-hand margin. This is a main clause beginning with the vayomer. So we have a continuing narrative form of the verb. So here our story really picks up. Then Abram said, and then in red, I put what the content of the speech actually is. And I indent that a couple of levels. So it makes it easy for me to see where the speech, what the different levels of this story are as we work through. Okay, good. Verse 3, Joyce. Good. Ve'ashbiacha ba'adonai Elohe ha-shamayim Velohe ha-aretz Asher lo tekach isha livni Mibnot ha-kena'ani Asher anochi yoshev Bekirbo. Good. So, what sense can you make of that?
I don't know what va'ashbiacha.
Mm-hmm. So we're given that in the notes. Va'ashbiacha.
So the Lord God, our God, will make you swear.
Actually, no. So, ashbiaka is I will make you swear, an oath. The verb is, the root verb is shava, sheen, beit, ayin. The aleph prefix on it is first person singular, and it's in a form that we'd say is a causative form. So, I will cause, one causes something, the content of the verb. I cause to swear. The ka ending is pronominal suffix you. So I will cause you to swear. So one word in Hebrew, we have to use about six words in English to translate. And I will cause you to swear. And then ba Adonai, the b there, prefix indicates in, or we might say by. But I will cause you to swear by the Lord, Elohe Hashamayim. Elohe Hashamayim. Hashamayim is the heavens, and Elohe, God. So it's the construct form of Elohim, God of heavens, and the Elohe Haaretz. And the God of earth, of the earth. And then we have our midway mark. Okay, under the left-hand side of the Aleph there. Asher lo tekach. So, do you recognize tekach? We've actually had a number of times, but the verb is lakach, but the lamed tends to disappear readily, which is why we have a dagesh there in the kof. It's left by the disappearing lamed. This is lakach, is to take. So, lo tekach, the tekach, we have a tav prefix, which is you, second person. So, lo tekach, you will not take. Isha, a wife. Livni. Now, this is made up of actually three little words in there. L. Bain E. To. Bain? 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 Son? Son. And E, yeah. So, to my son, we would have to say for my son. You will not take a wife for my son. Mibbenot. So, this is made up of min. And the note. Yeah, min, the min is from. And the nun of the min has disappeared and left the dagesh in the bait. So, the note. This is the plural of bat. Bat, benot. So what's the opposite of son? Daughters. Daughters. From the daughters. Hakana'ani. So I have a guess at this. Yeah. The Canaanites. So that you will not take a woman or a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites. Asher Anoki Yoshev Bekirbo. Anoki? Yeah? Asher is the relative pronoun. So it refers to the here to the Hakanatni, the Canaanites. And often you it's almost best to leave it untranslated until you get a sense of the whole phrase and then you figure out how to relate it to the previous.
So it could become
who or which, or yeah, okay. Something like that. So, Anokhi. Anokhi. This is a form of an. It can be Ani or Anokhi. No, who is he? He is she. Ani. Ani is that me? I or me? So, Anokhi Yoshev. So, Yoshev. And what form is it? O-e, that form? O-e, Yoshev. No. So it's category 5 on the previous page. So it's participle. It's a participle. And then Bekirbo, we're told, is in the inside of or among them. So Kerev is the heart, or the middle, the inside. But,
So don't marry the daughters of Canaanite.
Yeah. And so we then would have to, so the Anoki Yoshev Bekirbo, I am staying or dwelling in the midst of him, the O there referring to the Hakanani, the Canaanite, there, and the Hakanani really being used as a collective. And to make that, relate that, make good English, we'd have to say something like, the Canaanites among whom, in the midst of whom I am dwelling, or something like that. Okay, so I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not take a woman, a wife, for my son from the daughters of the Canaanite among whom I am dwelling, or in the midst of whom I am dwelling. Okay, good. So all okay on how that verse works?
So he's telling that to the slave?
He's his chief honcho is, head of his household, is chief servant. He's entrusting him with this great mission of going and getting a wife for his son. And he's making him swear. I make you swear that you're not going to go out and get a Canaanite woman.
So why does he bother to say, Canaanites that I'm living with?
Well, so all around me are Canaanite women. I don't go out and get a local woman, so. The easy thing to do is just, yeah, there's probably lots of eligible, lots of good young women around. lots of Canaanite women around, and he's saying, don't get any of them. So this means he's going to have to take a journey. Yes, I'm living in Canaan, but I don't want to intermarry with the Canaanites.
Now, why this does means, the man have to go under the thigh?
Well, that's some sort of cultural practice. Okay. And so that one, then, you go and look in something like a Bible background commentary, or any commentary will do this, but there's a helpful thing for this is a Bible background commentary that would explain customs like that. So this is what we do in swearing an oath. Okay, verse 4.
Where's he going?
your help. You. Your help has abandoned you. Yep. Mm-hmm. Le Yitzhak. Le Yitzhak. Le Yitzhak. Yitzhak. So, ki el artsi ve el moladti telech ve lachachta isha livni le Yitzhak. Le Yitzhak. That's Isaac, yep. Mm-hmm. So, Yitzhak Perlman, right, for example, is Isaac Perlman. So, Yitzhak. Okay, so, can you translate? Yeah, so key has a wide range of meanings, and here it has the meaning, it really indicates an exception. So, but, or, yeah, take it as that. El artsi. So, artsi. Yeah, so, can you break it down into any component part? Is there anything in there that you...
Okay, el means that that's the object.
Okay, well, el, so two. No, et would be the object.
Oh, yeah.
El is two. And if you just look at the consonants, aleph, resh, Sade, you recognize what that might be? So we actually, Eretz, yeah, we had in the previous sentence.
The land.
The land, and artsy would make it my land. Yeah. So go, but to my land, or my country, my land, v'el moladti, so Dobson tells us moladti is my family, my relatives. So from the verb yalad, he begat, or he begat a child, and then moledet is kin, relatives. So moladti. So but to my land and to my relatives, telech. Telech, you recognize anything in there? Telech. Like, so, go. So, halak is a verb, and the hey has disappeared. So, telek, you will go, or you go. This is an imperfect. So, the tav prefix indicating second person, right? You'll go. So, where is, when Abram says, my land and my relatives, so where is that? Actually, not Haran, or Haran, yeah. Haran up on the Euphrates. So remember, he had done a two-stage journey from up to Haran. Mm-hmm. Then they stayed there a while, and then from Haran down to Canaan. So
if he started in wouldn't that be considered his people?
It was. It would have started out as his people, but they were long enough in Haran that then when he'd send back and forth to his people... And we see this again with getting a son, a wife for Jacob, and so on, that Haran is the place that they go back to. And this is, it's going to be a sizable journey. It's going to have to take. So, but to my land and to my family, you will go. The lakachta. So what do you...
Something of take.
Uh-huh. And, yeah, take. And the ta ending is... No, in this case, it's the masculine, second masculine singular, ta ending. So here, this is a perfective form, so the we usually, mostly that's made up of suffixes, and ta is the suffix for second masculine singular. So it'd be lakakti, I take, lakakta, you take, you masculine singular, lakakt. And lakak, he takes, lakta, she takes, and so on. So, and you will take. So notice we've gone from a telek, which is an imperfective, now to a perfective, but with a vav prefix, so it's carrying on the sense of the telek. So you will go and you will take
a woman,
Isha livni. So which we had in the previous sentence, previous verse. For my son. And you will take a woman or a wife for my son, Le Yitzhak, for Isaac.
So, woman and wife are synonyms?
Isha, depending on context, it means woman or wife. And then the idiom, Lakach Isha Le, is to take a wife, i.e. to get married. So to take a wife. That's an accent. It's one of the accent marks. And one of the relatively minor ones, so you don't need to pay any attention to that. Yep, it's well, we're running out of time and we've got two people who have to read, so Leland can read tomorrow morning. So okay, verse 5, John. Good. Very, very good. Vayomer Eliv Ha'eved Ulai Lo Tove Ha'isha La Leket Acharai El Ha'aretz Hazot He Hashev Ashiv Et Binka El Ha'aretz Asher Yatsata Misham. So Vayomer Elav Ha'eved, if you just take those three words. It's the most common word. Then he said, yep. Elived, so yeah, to him, El, and then Iv is him, so to him, Elav. And then Ha'eved is the one who's doing the saying. So Ha'eved. So we had verse 2, Vayomer Avraham El Avdo. Then Abram said to his servant. So Avdo there was his servant. Here we have Ha'eved, the servant. So then the servant said to him. All right, so now we're getting the servant's reply back to Abraham. Ulai, and we're told that that is perhaps.
Perhaps, low, so not.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so Tove, she will be willing, from Ava, be willing. And here negated by the Lo. So Lo Tove, she will not be willing. And then Ha'isha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Perhaps the woman will not be willing. Laleket. And so we're told what that means, to go. Leket is a form of the verb halach. It's actually the infinitive of the verb halach, to go, and then, but we haven't yet fully learnt the infinitive, so. And then the lamed on the front sort of functions just like R2. So our infinitive we think of as to go. So that's how the lamed on the front is serving as the to that we use with an infinitive.
So their infinitive is not, you wouldn't actually translate their infinitive with, well,
with a to?
With a to.
When it's prefixed with a lamed, actually you would. But the infinitive can also be used in a bunch of other situations where you wouldn't translate it that way. But here where you have a lamed prefix, you would translate with a to. So to go. And then acharai we acharai is after or behind. And acharai would be after me. Yeah, really, that's what he's meaning, yeah. So perhaps the woman will not be willing to go or to come after me. El ha'aretz hazot. So ha'aretz we've had before. To the land, and then hazot, zot?
That land.
This land. So the near demonstrative. Zot, this land. Then we have our pause. A little accent there indicating our break. He hashev, yeah, and the he on the front indicates a question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we're going to eventually learn that he hashev ashiv. So both those are based on the verb shuv, to take. So he's using the verb twice, and this is a way of emphasizing something in Hebrew. But you'll learn about that in the future. So he's asking a question, and he's being quite emphatic about it. Shall I really take back? Or something like that. Binka, we've... So, made up of Bain and Ha. Bain? Ben?
Son.
So Binka would be the Ka ending, your son. Yep. So I take back your son, El Ha'aretz. Mm-hmm. Remember Asher?
Which
or, yep, so relative pronoun. Yatsata Mishan. Yatsa? Yatsa. Uh-huh. You go out. And the Misham. From, and the, yeah, from there. So yatsata, here and there, it's a perfective. So we might put that into the past, which you went out from.
So should I take your son back home?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what he's saying. So then the servant said to him, perhaps the woman will not be willing to go after me to this land. Should I return, should I take back your son to the land And then we'd have to turn this into, say, from which you went out, or from which you have come. Okay, and then, well done, John. We'll give Sean a verse to read, and then break. So, Vayomer Elav Abraham Hishamer Lecha Pen Tashiv Et Bani Shama. So. Mm-hmm. Good. And Abram said to him, and Hishamer, now, Shamar, do you recognize the verb in there? Shamar? To keep, to guard. Keep or guard, and then lecha,
to you,
right. So, and this really taken together is something like guard yourself, keep yourself, guard yourself. Pen, and then pen we're told is lest. So we might translate it, watch yourself, or basically saying, be sure you, lest you do something, guard yourself from doing something. Pen tashiv, and this is from shuv, with a t prefix, so a t prefix indicating you. And it's you cause to return, in the sense of you bring. So watch yourself lest you bring or return et bani shama. So bani, bani, Sean, ben is son, and bani, my son, shama. Uh-huh, there. So it's made up of sham, which is there, and then the directional hey, to there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then Abram said to him, guard yourself lest you return my son to there, or bring back my son to there, i.e., make sure you don't do that. That's a emphatic way of saying, make sure you don't take my son back to there. Because he might not come back. So, okay, good. So we got through six verses, and then if you look at the color coding, so that helps show where the dialogue is. So perhaps you'd like, over the Christmas break, work your way through the remaining four verses, and if need be, look at an English translation, and then use the notes that Dobson has, and then just go back over the whole thing and see if you can read it and just get more comfortable with it and how it's all working. And then in the book on page 99, here we have an actual page from a handwritten Hebrew manuscript. So you can see what it actually looks like. And then some vocabulary on page 100.